great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. You know what we're going to do today? We're going to take a look at your pet's health with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk from the University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine. Always great to have her come by. We're going to talk about high blood pressure in pets. Hairballs. Thursday is National Hairball Day. Who'd have thunk it? I didn't know there was a National Hairball Day. So I'm sure we'll talk about hairballs as well with her. And, of course, answer all of your questions as we visit with her. Our number is 800-642-1234. So it's going to be great to talk with her. And you know what? It's always great to talk with Mike Crane. You know, we're in our Wisconsin Public Radio membership drive. Mike Crane is director of Wisconsin Public Radio and with me in the studio. Hi, Mike.
It's great to be here.
Great to have you here. You know, as we talk about our fund drive, we have the single largest source of funding coming from WPR programs, listener-supported programs. This drive, it's your chance to support all the programs you listen to throughout the year, and I hope you'll take that important step when you donate at WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. And how are we doing, Mike?
Well, we heard from 8 donors in the last hour. That's terrific. Thanks to everyone who's been giving. And our goal for this hour is to get 25 more pledges. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, help pay for the programs you rely on every day when you give at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
You know, Larry was getting at this. People who listen, people like you listening right now, you provide the most significant share of funding to support the Ideas Network and all of WPR. Your donation is an investment in Wisconsin Public Radio and in programs that deliver great value, like the one we're getting into right now with Sandy Sawchuk as our guest.
I'm kind of an independent guy, you know, and your contribution, speaking of independence, keeps independent public radio on the air for you and for your community. So I hope you'll give now at WPR.org, or you can phone 888-202-2552.
You know, there isn't a lot that you can acquire without having to pay up front or maybe pay with interest or something like that. But you don't have to pay for public radio. It's here for free without an upfront charge, and yet it's really important for you to say, maybe I should pay a little bit anyway, because sometimes people really don't do that, and the relationship ends with taking the thing they enjoy and leaving it at that.
Yeah. For a special group of people, the relationship, it changes over time. They become attached, and you know, then they give financial support. They willingly pay for something that others get for free.
And those are the very special people we call members, and we'd love to welcome you as a member today. Become our newest member right now with your first ever gift of $10 or $20 a month at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We have a special thank you gift this drive. Reach out and read books for kids.
I'm Dr. Dipesh Nafsaria. I'm an associate professor of pediatrics at the University of Wisconsin, and I'm founding medical director of Reach Out and Read Wisconsin. What we do through Reach Out and Read is use primary care checkups and hand the book directly to the child. It's about familiarity with the books. They start to get it, getting this idea that print conveys information. It's about associating it with a loving, tender moment with their caregiver.
Do two good things at once when you support WPR programs and ask for the Reach Out and Read Books for Kids thank you gift. Give $10 a month or more. Here's how.
You can pledge at WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. Larry Mueller here with Mike Crane. Listener support, single largest source of funding for the WPR programs you rely on. And that's why your support during this spring membership drive is so, so, so important. And, you know, maybe your gift is $10 a month, maybe it's $100 a month, whatever amount you choose. Mike, that's the right amount, isn't it?
It absolutely is. You know, we value your time, and we also want to make sure, therefore, that it takes just a few minutes for you to make your pledge to WPR. All we need is your name, your contact information, how much you want to give, of course, and how you would like to pay.
Quick and easy to do, and your gift really helps us. So take the next few minutes to support the station you count on at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
We're looking for 25 pledges this hour. We've got about 49 minutes now to do that. You make WPR possible when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And I like that this pledge drive does two good things at once. When you make your donation to support WPR programs, go ahead and ask for the Reach Out and Read thank you gift. Your thank you gift will provide books for young children, and that's available when you give $10 a month at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
I'm sure a lot of people share the feeling I do when reading to my grandkids now. It was my kids before. Just what an intimate and important and exciting time that is for both of us. Now is, by the way, a great time to become a sustaining member of WPR. It's easy to set up a convenient, ongoing monthly donation from your bank account or credit card at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And I hope you will do that right now. It'd be a wonderful thing for you to do while you are listening to Dr. Sandy Sawchuk from the UW School of Veterinary Medicine. Hi, Sandy.
Hi, Larry. Nice to be here today.
Nice to have you here. Well, you know, I mentioned hypertension and cats and dogs. Is it happen in both?
Yeah. You know, pets don't worry about paying their credit card bills, and they don't deposit cholesterol in their blood vessels like people do, or it doesn't tend to run in families where, you know, families like I'm hypertensive, and I have been for years, and then you start looking back, and it's like, yeah, it runs in the family. But they still can have high blood pressure, and it's typically when they start to get older. And, you know, it's one of those things where sometimes we look for hypertension once we've diagnosed a disease that tends to be associated with it. And other times we have patients come in with symptoms of things like kidney disease. They may be passing protein in their urine, or they, for many cats, they come in with retinal bleeding. And so they may come in either acutely blind, because those little tiny blood vessels in the kidney and in the eye just under so much pressure end up rupturing and bleeding. And sometimes it's unfortunate that that's when we get, you know, start looking at, is your pet hypertensive? It's a reason why they call it the silent killer in people. It's the same thing can happen in pets. And yet, you know, when we go into the doctor's office, typically every time we go in for anything, what do? Pull out the cuff, do our blood pressure. We don't typically do that in our animal patients for a number of reasons. You know, our equipment is not very sensitive. In people, you can use a stethoscope, but in dogs and cats, the blood vessels that we use for measuring blood pressure are tiny enough that we often have to use other equipment that's going to amplify the sound, like a little Doppler type thing over a blood vessel. And you know, we can't explain to pets to just sit and relax, you know. And so we often get that white coat syndrome as well. So the nervous pet and, you know, the nervous owner, because we're like, we're doing something to their pet. But we still use the same cuffs, but they're just little itty bitties. And we put them either around their distal limb or sometimes even on their tail to monitor their blood pressure. And we often will take multiple readings. People wonder why we spend so much time taking blood pressure. And it's because we have to usually throw out the first couple of readings because, you know, the pets, like, they're like, what are you doing to me? And then they realize, oh, you're not going to hurt me. This isn't a problem. So we like to take minimum of 5 readings, if not more, and kind of take the average. We throw out the high, we throw out the low, and we like to take the average. And, you know, in humans, we like to think of blood pressure as being like 120 over 80 is considered normal. That's pretty much the normal for dogs and cats as well. But we like to say that if it is less than 160, that probably accounts for that nervousness and so on. And so we try to, you know, have that little fudge factor in there. And if it's over 160, we get concerned. And, you know, so what are some of the things besides having a pet come in with symptoms of like maybe blindness because they've been undiagnosed with hypertension? What are some of the things that we would be looking at checking blood pressure on if we had them come into our clinic? Well, Number one is kidney disease, and we know that about over 90% of dogs with kidney disease will be hypertensive, and about 60% of cats are hypertensive. So anytime we diagnose chronic kidney disease, we get out the blood pressure blood pressure equipment to measure blood pressure, because we don't want to have kidney disease get worse.
Yeah.
That high blood pressure is going to just keep amplifying the rate of the kidneys being destroyed. Cats that are hyperthyroid, about 80%+ of them are hypertensive as well. And that's a very common problem in older cats. Often we won't bother initially when we have a cat that's hypertensive because they're hyperthyroid. We don't treat it, because once you treat the hyperthyroidism, their hypertension goes away. But there's other diseases like diabetes, sugar diabetes, Cushing's disease, which I've talked about a lot in this show, overactive adrenal glands. Those are all things that we would be, if we diagnose that, we'd be saying we better check to see if you're hypertensive, and we pull out the cuff and go to a nice quiet room and sometimes even get them back for another visit. But it's treated just like it is with us.
I wondered about that.
We use enalapril or benazepril, which are ACE inhibitors, angiotensin converting enzyme inhibitors. Amlodipine is also used, which is a calcium channel blocker. Those are probably the big drugs that we use. And sometimes we even have to resort to using other things. But we don't typically restrict salt in the diet. But it is something that is treatable, sometimes by treating the condition that's causing it, and other times by treating the hypertension and monitoring it. So just know that if you have an older pet, it may or may not get its blood pressure checked unless your vet is really thinking that there's something going on that requires it, just because it's not that easy to do sometimes.
You know, you mentioned salt, and I'm thinking, when the heck would Coco or Tiger get salt? My cats get salt in their diet. Is it available? Is it there?
It's in food. I mean, sodium is an important part of every diet. We all need it. All mammals need it to be able to survive. But it's when it's in excess that it becomes more of an issue. And so sometimes it's things like the basting on different dog treats that could potentially cause that. Or the food that you are feeding your pet that you don't tell your veterinarian about, you know, so that happens as well. But, you know, and so salt doesn't appear to be a huge issue. If they've got kidney disease, the kidney diets that we use to help preserve kidney function and make it easier for the kidneys to work typically are a little sodium restricted, but not that much.
Okay. Well, let's give our listeners a chance to join in. If you have a question for Dr. Sandy, I hope you'll join in as we look at your pet's health. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@WPR as well. Love to hear from you. So give a call, shoot us an email. Thursday is Hairball Awareness Day. Who'd have thunk it? Why do we need to be aware of hairballs?
When I saw that, I went, finally, someone besides veterinarians are thinking, well, we better get the word out here. Because, you know, if you ask anybody on the street, especially cat owners, they think it's normal for cats to be, you know, vomiting up hair all the time. And it isn't. It really isn't. Hair is meant to be passed. And I give usually owners a pass with maybe one or two hairballs a year. Fine. Okay. But if it's anything more than that, usually means that there's something going on. And it usually means either that the pet is over-grooming and ingesting too much hair. So they may have some type of skin issue or pain if they're licking over a spot that's painful. Sometimes it's anxiety related and they're over-grooming as a compulsive disorder and ingesting too much hair. The majority of the cases, though, are typically caused by some type of altered gastrointestinal motility problem. And that can result from some type of chronic blockage, scarring, inflammation. Even things like dehydration can cause hair to not pass through as much. So it's one of those things where if you have a pet that is vomiting up hair, And it's more than a couple of times a year. And you are doing routine grooming, especially on some of these long-haired cats. Bring it up with your veterinarian. It's something that probably should be looked into. Just going out and grabbing an over-the-counter hairball remedy, which typically are petroleum-based, petrolatum-based, or Vaseline-based products, that's going to help lube up the hair and may help it move through. But I've never seen a cat with a lubricant deficiency, you know. So if your cat requires that to be functional, there's probably something else going on.
Yep.
And then the hair, you know, that's the other issue is the fiber-based diets for hairballs. They may help move the hair through, but again, are probably not that necessary. So, you know, don't be surprised if you bring this up with your veterinarian and your vet says, well, I want to do a physical exam. I'm going to look at your pet's skin very carefully to see if there's any signs for over-grooming. I'm going to evaluate for pain to see if there's anything like that your pet may be over-grooming in spots like that. I'll probably do some blood work. I may check for parasites because that's one of the other things that can cause some motility issues in a gut. And maybe even jump to taking radiographs and maybe even abdominal ultrasound and biopsies.
Dr. Sandy Sawchuk, our guest from the University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine. Always great to have her with us, and always great to welcome Mike Crane back with us, our director of Wisconsin Public Radio, and he's here because this is our Wisconsin Public Radio Spring Membership Drive, here to raise the money that pays for the programs that you enjoy, programs like this one. So I hope you'll support us. Support from people like you is the single largest piece of funding for WPR programs. And really, that's why your support at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552 is so important. Isn't it, Mike?
It really is. And what a great resource to have Sandy here talking with us about some of our dearest family members, our pets. And so we look forward to hearing some answers to some listener questions in just a bit. Right now, though, we're looking for 24 more pledges in the next 37 minutes. Your gift right now is so important because when you give, you support the programs you rely on here on the Ideas Network.
Thank you very much if you've already given. If you haven't, this is a good time right now. Give at WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552.
From 11 to 1230 every weekday, we take a break from the news and from politics to talk about advice topics and the outdoors and how to fix your computer. Interesting things going on from the university and all around our state, health issues, finances, and today, hairballs.
And there's not, that's the secret ingredient today is the hairballs. But really, there's a not-so-secret ingredient to this winning recipe that we have, and that's listener support, your support. You make the programs possible when you give at WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552.
Whether you're already a member or you're making your first pledge ever, anyone can become a sustaining member. Just let us know what monthly amount works for you and whether you'd like to have that come out of your bank account or your credit card.
It's that easy. And once it's set up, your membership automatically renews. So start your sustaining membership right now at WPR.org or by phoning 888-202-2552.
Public radio has enriched my life in so many ways. When I was a new mother back in the 1990s, and I became hooked on Wisconsin Public Radio. I've been an avid listener, and each day of my life is enriched because of the depth of the topics offered, the balanced dialogue that the hosts and the guests both offer. The Ideas Network makes me a better mother and a better citizen, and I'm so thankful for it.
You can go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 to make your pledge. Larry Mueller here with Mike Crane, asking for your support during this spring membership drive because it's what makes the WPR programs you rely on possible. Your gift, maybe it's $10 or $20 a month, whatever amount you choose, that's the right amount.
That's right. Speaking of whatever amount you choose, it's a voluntary contribution to support WPR programs. You decide how much to give. How about considering a gift of $100 or $200 a month?
Yeah, that might be what you pay for cable or your family phone plan. Listening to WPR is something you do every day. I hope you'll put a value on it, like other things that are important to you, at WPR.org or by phoning 888-202-2552.
24 more pledges to go in the next 34 minutes to get to our goal for this hour. Your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is such an important part of funding the programs you enjoy.
So you can show your support for WPR, for Wisconsin Public Radio, and remember to ask for the Reach Out and Read thank you gift. Your donation will support the programs you rely on, and your thank you gift will provide books for young children. So you're doing two good things at once when you give $10 a month or more at WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552.
And here's a sentiment from Nancy from Brookfield that really is a lot like other people we're hearing. I love WPR. I have learned so much that I am compelled to donate today. Thank you, Nancy. And thanks to everybody who's a sustaining member. If you are already one, how about increasing your donation by $5 or $10 a month at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Your pledge right now, so important. Just go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. Taking a look at your pet's health today with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk from the UW-Madison School of Veterinary Medicine. Callers online, Dr. Sandy. So let's just go to the phones. And I think it's Lisa in Milwaukee up now. Lisa, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm just wondering about the safety of those plug-in air fresheners in households where there's cats, like especially if they're used, like one is in the same room where the, you know, litter box is or that kind of thing. There's quite a bit of information on the Internet, but it's quite variable about how safe that is.
Yeah, that's a really good question. You know, and since it's Hairball Awareness Day on Thursday, you know, one of the things that gets misdiagnosed frequently is cats with asthma will gag and cough, and people think that they're trying to cough up a hairball, but they're actually vomiting up a hairball. And so we know that air fresheners in cats that are predisposed to asthma, which is a fairly common condition, can be made worse with the presence of air fresheners. Those volatile chemicals that are being released from either the solid air freshener or the plug-in kind can be quite irritating to the respiratory system in cats. So you have to know your cat, and if your cat does have asthma, I'd be avoiding using anything like that. We know that some of the things that, especially the air fresheners that are using essential oils, you know, some people will use the, there's a newer devices out that actually atomize the essential oils into the air. Those will actually float down and land on the carpets and things. And although it's not a problem for us, because cats are down on that level, they're going to groom them off themselves, and they can end up causing neurologic problems, liver issues, and all kinds of health problems.
Goodness.
So you don't want to use any of these essential oil type things that are in the environment. The ones that use the little diffuser reeds, the problem with that would be if the cat were to tip it over and spill it and get it on themselves. And so it comes down to the health of your cat and then what type of air freshener you want to use. I think you're probably better off if you're using it in a room with a litter box. You scoop the box daily, okay? Maybe put in some type of a ventilation system in there to deal with odors, but dealing with them from where they originate from the box and keeping the box nice and clean is probably your best bet rather than trying to mask it with something that could potentially be a health hazard for your cat.
Yeah. Does scented candles, anything on that?
Again, some of them will have essential oils and things in them, and so you have to be careful with that. I'm more concerned about cats either burning their whiskers while they're putting their nose down in it, or tipping the candle over and spilling hot wax on themselves. I've had several cats in my career come in that have just got wax all down their side and skin irritation from having that hot wax hit their skin. So again, if you've got pets, make sure things like that are definitely out of reach.
Lisa, thanks again for calling. Let's go to Gloria next in Greenfield. Hi, Gloria. Thank you for calling.
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call. Dr. Sandy, we adopted a lovely, very smart Snow White Russ Collie puppy, and she was given to us rather than a purchase because she was diagnosed with a grade 1 to 2 heart murmur.
Mm-hmm.
She's extremely active and healthy appearing. Our vet mentioned a likelihood that she may even outgrow this. He had a tough time hearing it. I'm wondering how concerned we need to be about her diagnosis.
Yeah. How old is your puppy?
She's 8.5 months old.
8.5 months. Normally in puppies, we will, not normally, but sometimes we will hear murmurs when we're doing our initial puppy exam, when they're coming in prior to being sold or adopted. And often we will, if they're a really quiet murmur like what you're describing in your dog, we grade murmurs on a scale of 1 to 6, 1 being the quietest, very difficult to hear, 6 being so loud that you can hear it with your stethoscope off the chest. So your puppy has a very low-grade murmur. If we hear a low-grade murmur in a very young puppy, we don't get too worried about it until they're over 16 weeks of age. Typically, those murmurs will go away. We call them innocent murmurs. It has to do with, blood flow and the blood viscosity and things like that, and they'll often disappear. But a murmur that's persisting up until 8 months of age would be something that I think should be evaluated, especially if you're planning on anesthetizing your dog for routine surgery, like having her spayed, having teeth done, and things like that down the road. It would be very helpful to know what's going on. You really can't grade the severity of the heart disease by the intensity of the murmur in some cases. So it's nice to know what it is. And so what do you have to do to get a diagnosis? Often getting a chest x-ray would be your first step, and then an echocardiogram, which is an ultrasound of the heart, to be able to see what's producing this turbulence in the flow of blood as it's going through all the heart chambers and the blood vessels. And that would let us know, do we have to be monitoring this? Is it something that is potentially going to cause problems down the road for your dog and maybe shorten their life expectancy? So right now, I think that would be my recommendation. It probably should be evaluated.
All right. There you go. Thank you so much for calling, Gloria. Gregory in Turtle Lake, we're on to you now. Hi, Greg. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Sandy. Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
She's about a 10-year-old Australian Shepherd, and probably about 4 years ago, she had a kidney stone removed. It was about the size of a person, a fist, a small fist.
Mm-hmm.
And now she's been fine ever since, but now just lately when she goes outside, she pees real often, like about every 20 steps or so, and a little bit comes out. But when she's in the house, she's fine. She doesn't pee in the house.
Okay.
But she licks herself a lot.
Yeah. My guess is that wasn't a kidney stone, but a bladder stone, because we typically don't see kidney stones in dogs very often, but bladder stones can become quite large, and they can result from a number of things. Some of the stones are caused by infection, and if you've got an underlying urinary tract infection and the right mineral composition in the urine, you can end up developing kidney or bladder stones for that reason. And we'll also see it sometimes be a genetic predisposition to forming bladder stones as well. Usually when a bladder stone is removed, we send it in for analysis so we know what kind of stone it is, because that's going to help us with long-term management. Most dogs have to go on special diets to be able to control the mineral composition in their urine. Sometimes we have to control the pH of the urine as well, depending on the stone type. And it sounds like your dog is showing symptoms of having more urinary irritation again. So I think it's time to go back in, have a urine sample taken that's sterile, have it evaluated, potentially cultured, and you may want to get some x-rays done of her bladder again, because if she's not on something to prevent her from forming bladder stones again, and she's a stone former, she may be right back having a stone there again. So I hate to break that news to you, but I think what you're seeing is definitely something that I would be concerned about.
So what's the anti-stone developer formula there?
Yeah, usually we're looking at specialty diets like we do with cats. And so they typically are diets for the two most common stones that we see in dogs are either calcium oxalate stones, where we want to try to maintain the urine in more neutral pH around 7. Sometimes they're what's called struvite stones, where we'll see those often with infections and things, and we like to have those, usually a more acidic urine, and then we look at magnesium and calcium and so on, and there's even some types of stones that we see in pets that are, they need to be on a vegetarian diet, they need to be on a low purine diet, which means no animal protein, and so there's even some really oddball specialty diets for certain types of bladder stones that we see depending on the breed. So it's
vegetarian diet,
yeah,
eh?
But wow. Not for cats, dogs.
I was going to say, how would you do that for cats?
It would be almost impossible to make a vegetarian diet for a cat. So you'd have to be a chemist, an extraordinary chemist to be able to do that. But first of all, it comes down to what was the type of bladder stone she had before. I would be very suspicious. Suspicious it's the same type again.
Oh, there we go.
Okay.
Gregory, thank you. Yeah, appreciate your call very much. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'd love to hear from you. And I always love to hear from Mike Crane, who's back with me. This is our Wisconsin Public Radio Spring Membership Drive. And he's here to help me tell you about listener contributions here at WPR. Listener contributions are the single largest source of funding. Your gift keeps the programs you value, including this one, on the air. So I hope you'll make your contribution right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
So we're looking for about a pledge a minute, 22 more pledges in about 22 minutes. We set these hourly goals to make sure we have the funding for the programs you enjoy here on the Ideas Network. So make your donation now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, I really enjoy talking with Dr. Sandy. She comes by every month, and we're not paying her a whole lot. In fact, we're not paying her anything. She does this because she enjoys talking with people, helping you with your pet's help. She supports listeners here at Wisconsin Public Radio, and we are listener supported, and that means that when you give at WPR.org or by phoning 888-202-2552, you make this hour and many more hours possible. So go ahead, choose an amount that works for you, take a few minutes, and make your pledge.
And how about letting the impact of your pledge go beyond great radio? Ask for the Reach Out and Read thank you gift when you give $10 a month or more.
Your thank you gift provides books to young children during their doctor visit, which is great for parent-child bonding and child development. You do two good things at once. Support the WPR programs you love and ask for the Reach Out and Read thank you gift.
I prefer more balanced conversation. That's what took me to WPR. When I got there, I found a whole host of programming that interests me. Gardening shows, home improvement shows, humor shows, word language shows, things that just grab my interest and grab my attention. It's not just one thing. We had been giving on an annual basis for years. I didn't want this to be an annual decision, and I think that's where we decided to make the change and become sustaining members. It was a statement of values as much as a statement of financial commitment. I'm Bruce from Brookfield, Wisconsin. I enjoy being a WPR sustainer, and I think you will too.
Bruce, thank you so much. And thank you if you've already contributed. If you haven't, go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 to make your donation in support of the programs you count on. Larry Mueller here with Mike Crane asking for your help here. We're raising the money that keeps Wisconsin Public Radio and all the programs you enjoy on the air. And whether your gift is $10 a month, maybe $100 or more a month, we appreciate and we count on your gift.
You know, time flies, and it maybe is longer than you realize since you last gave to WPR. So we're asking you, make sure to keep your membership active.
Because you depend on WPR like other services you pay for, like the internet or your phone, we're asking you to recommit your support to WPR right now with a gift in whatever amount works for you at WPR.org. We're at 888-202-2552. We're slowly moving here toward our goal.
Yeah, we need to catch up. 21 more pledges to go and now 18 minutes to get them. You make WPR possible when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And this pledge drive, you do two good things at once when you make your donation to support WPR programs. Ask for the Reach Out and Read thank you gift. Your thank you gift will provide books for young children. And that's available when you give $10 a month at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. You know what I do? I talk myself into this every single drive. I wind up giving on every drive.
Oh, that's all right. You can keep doing that, Larry.
I do it.
And some people do. However you'd like to give. You know, yeah. Some people like to give annually. Some people like to give every time there's a pledge drive, like you, Larry. Or you can, you know, you could set up a sustaining membership where that will be taken care of for you. And that's really easy to do. It's an ongoing monthly donation from your bank account or credit card. So get started. However you'd like to make that pledge, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Your gift is powerful. It really makes a difference at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Thanks if you've already given. If you haven't, now is a great time to do it. We're taking a look at your pet's health today with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk, clinical instructor at the UW-Madison School of Veterinary Medicine. Larry Mueller here. Thanks so much for joining in today. Dr. Sandy, we have lots of callers online, so let's go right to the phones here. Wayne in Grand Marsh, it's your turn. Thanks for waiting. Wayne, what's on your mind?
Well, one of our dogs had cancer in the past, and the wife just happened to come across this panel of veterinarians who have made up this collection of CDs and that, and a lot of it was talking about the diets and what they were saying about the processed food and eating raw food. And a lot of them make comparisons to what's going on in nature versus what we're doing here in our homes. And one of the things that came up was they said that there's not as much cancer out in nature as there is with the pets we're feeding all the different diets to. And I was wondering, is that possibly true?
Well, my take on it is dogs that are living wild canids out in, you know, the environment, who's doing autopsies on them to find out how they're dying? You know, are they living long enough to be able to get cancer? Kind of my pet phrase is, if you have a pet that doesn't get hit by a car or die of an infectious disease, they're likely, especially if they're a large breed dog, going to die of cancer. Small breed dogs like poodles and chihuahuas and so on typically die of organ failure, like heart disease or kidney failure. But larger breed dogs, it tends to be cancer. And so we know that there's a strong, like a genetic predisposition to it. If you came to our oncology clinic and walked into the waiting room, you're going to see a lot of golden retrievers. They tend to be the cancer poster child. In fact, there's a large national study going on that's looking at golden retrievers and trying to figure out just, you know, what are the triggers. Because we know that there are some environmental exposures that potentially can cause it, you know, like cigarette smoking. We know that it may predispose pets to certain types of cancer. Nasal cancer has been bounced around, intestinal cancer in cats because they're grooming themselves. So environmental exposure to different irritating, toxic things potentially could be a problem. But it often just comes down to age. I'm not sure how old your pet was when it died of cancer, but it's just like in people, it can happen. The whole thing about raw diets, there's no evidence at all, no evidence-based research to show that raw diets are better for pets than cooked diets. And in fact, raw diets, the big risk is infectious diseases, not only for the dog, but mainly for you, salmonella and E. coli and that type of thing. And so I always want you to, if you're looking at these videos, look at where they're getting their information. Who are these people producing these videos that you're looking at? Are they selling their own pet food? And what are their credentials? I mean, are they a board certified veterinary nutritionist, or is it somebody else that's, you know, again, just trying to market their dog food? So yeah. I wish it was that easy to just feed a certain food and cure cancer. If it was, boy, I would save so many of my patients, but yeah. It isn't.
Oh, thank you so much for calling, Wayne. Appreciate it. And John in Oak Park, Illinois, it's your turn. Hi, John.
Hi, and also a proud WPR contributor, by
Good,
the way.
Thank
Good
you.
For you.
I'm in WBEZ country, but I also have a place in Wisconsin and Highlands, and love your show. I wanted to make a comment about something. I'm, by the way, a retired human veterinarian, specifically a pediatrician. And I want to comment on the term murmur.
Okay.
Because this is something that has bothered me for all my life. I always have patients who come to me say, well, he had a murmur, but he outgrew it. And it's very important for people to understand, because this is a bandied about term that that all of us use, the term murmur. A murmur is not a disease. A murmur is something that somebody hears, usually through a stethoscope.
Mm-hmm.
And there's relatively little relationship between the murmur itself and the severity of disease, although that's a qualified statement, by the way.
Yeah.
But especially in pediatrics, most murmurs, unless they're often accompanied by somewhat obvious other signs, are ultimately benign and just have to do with the dynamics of blood normally flowing through the heart. And what I usually tell people is I turn on a faucet in my office and I say, see, this water is flowing through a narrow space and it's creating noise.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing wrong with this faucet. And, you know, obviously, if I'm convinced it's a benign murmur, I explain that to them. It's not a disease. The heart is normal. If I'm not 100% sure, then the cardiologist does an echocardiogram, which solves the problem. But I think it's very important for people to understand, not just for veterinary purposes, but for also human purposes, that the word murmur has very little significance other than somebody's paying a little bit of attention to the heart and has to make a decision about what needs to be done.
Yeah.
And generally, it's a benign entity.
Yeah, and I totally agree with you. I mean, we, unfortunately, in the veterinary world, we tend to have very closed populations that are interbreeding. And so when we have different breeds that have murmurs, they may represent a genetic predisposition to having some type of a cardiac defect. And that would then take that dog out of the reproducing pool if we found that. You know, just to give you an example, like I have English bulldogs, and English bulldogs are probably the number one murmur we hear with them is something called pulmonic stenosis, which is I actually adopted a dog that came in with one, and she lived to be 15 weeks of age, and that's very heartbreaking. But that's something that, you know, when we see different breeds, we start thinking of different types of heart issues. We also have to look at the age of the dog as well, because we see very, very commonly as dogs get older, a very common problem is mitral valve regurgitation, which can lead to congestive heart failure. And so when we look at the age, we look at the intensity of the murmur, we look at the breed, we look at the function of the dog. Is it going to be a hunting dog, a working dog, a show dog, a breeding dog? And should this animal be then, but you know, used for that? The caller that called about the rough-coated collie with the murmur, one, it's a pure white collie. It would probably not be accepted in the ring, but I don't think, because it's all white. But it would also be a dog that, if it has a persistent murmur, should be taken out of the genetic pool, even though it has zero clinical signs. So we're kind of approaching it from not just you can live your life normally with this murmur, but we just don't want to be passing on the genetics to a very small population.
Yeah, there we go. Thanks again.
Yeah, John. Thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah, appreciate your call very much. Tom in Monona, your turn now. Hi, Tom.
Thanks very much. Yeah, a quick history on the cat in question. Adopted from the Humane Society in 2000 as a kitten, so going on 18 years old. Had a full geriatric panel about 6 months ago. Everything was good, but he has been treated for the past 3 years for a thyroid condition, so he's on flimazole for that. The biggest concern was over the last 3 years, there's been a decline in his weight, significant, down from 9 pounds to 7 pounds. And the vet had some concern and thought he would run one extra test because his thyroid was very well controlled. And he ran this feline pancreatic lipase SNAP test and said that was positive for pancreatitis. He has not had a lot of vomiting. He only had one episode. I did have a med for that, but didn't have to use it. His appetite has been poor. I did try one dose of the this stimulant, this mirtazapine, which he reacted, kind of overreacted to. I heard he might become vocal. He spent about an hour shouting at me, I guess.
But what do we do about this?
Yeah,
Annie?
You know, pancreatitis is one of those things that is very different than it is in dogs when we see it in cats. It tends to be more chronic and presents just like what you're describing. Kind of a poor appetite, losing weight, you know, just not doing right. And the way we manage it is, especially if they come in with a more acute onset, definitely pain control. Some of these cats are so painful, they don't want to eat and may not drink and then get dehydrated, which just aggravates the situation. We make sure that they're staying well hydrated. We try to go with, you know, palatable diets that typically are a little bit lower in fat to take some of the effort away from the pancreas for digesting these foods. The appetite stimulants, like you're saying, you may want to try a different one if that doesn't work. And then lastly, some of these cats end up having small intestinal dysbiosis, which means the bacteria in the gut is off because of the whole digestive enzymes being off. And so having cobalamin and folate levels done in your cat, sometimes it's just a simple matter of supplementing them with a B vitamin called cobalamin, and that is may improve the appetite and make your cat do a whole lot better. It's a simple blood test. They have to go in fasted.
And thank you very much for calling, Tom. Appreciate your call. As you know, we appreciate all the calls that we get here on Wisconsin Public Radio, and especially during our Wisconsin Public Radio Spring Membership Drive. Larry Mueller here with Mike Crane. Your gift right now, so important. That's because gifts from people like you are the single source of funding for our WPR programs. Your gift keeps this program, all the programs you enjoy, going strong. So invest in your future listening right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Well, Larry, it's going a little slow this hour. Maybe we can pick up here in the last minutes of this hour and catch up next half hour of the show. Still looking for 19 pledges toward our goal of 25. Make your gift right now to support the programs you enjoy here on the Ideas Network and that you rely on every day.
WPR programs are listeners powered. That means that your pledge right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552 helps pay for the programs you rely on. It really does make a difference.
It really does, and so does just the listening to the program. Haven't you had the experience, even just today, listening to Larry and Sandy talk, I didn't know that. I'm going to tell someone about that, something like that. That happens all the time as we listen to WPR and the Ideas Network. And WPR is listener-supported, and that means when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. You're making this hour and many more hours possible. So choose an amount that works for you. Take just a few minutes and make your pledge.
And thank you for being a WPR listener, by the way. And thank you to everyone who's already a member. It's listener-supported, your support, that makes WPR an unparalleled resource in Wisconsin and beyond Wisconsin, as we've heard today from some of our out-of-state callers. If WPR is your radio home, I hope you'll support it right now. Make the news, discussions, music possible with your first ever gift of maybe $10 or $20 a month at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
We've probably all had this happen. We spend money on something and then hardly ever use it.
I would say closets and closets full of clothes that I never wore.
I bought a pair of backcountry skis a few years ago that I have never used.
I bought an extremely cheap violin case that was so cheap that I threw it away within 10 minutes of opening it.
Unlike some investments, your donation to Wisconsin Public Radio is a good one. One you'll get value from every day. Make your gift to support the programs you count on right now. Here's how.
You do it by pledging at WPR.org or by phoning 888-202-2552. Larry Mueller with Mike Crane. Listener supports a single biggest source of funding for the WPR programs you rely on. That's why your support is so important. So maybe your gift, $10 a month or $100 a month, whatever amount you choose, that's the right amount.
And giving to WPR is really easy. All we need is your name, your contact information, the amount you'd like to pledge, and how you'd like to pay.
Just takes a few minutes to do it. Your pledge right now really makes a difference at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Now we're down to 18 more to go.
Well, we're going to have to catch up next hour, I think, Larry. But thank you to everybody who's giving right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. It's such an important part of funding the programs you enjoy.
Show your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. And remember to ask for the reach out and read thank you gift, your donation. Your support for Wisconsin Public Radio is so, so important. That thank you gift will provide books for young children. So you do two good things at once when you give $10 a month or more at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Dr. Sandy Sawchuk with us today, and she'll be. We're going to take a quick look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us, and then we'll be back with Dr. Sandy to answer your questions. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, taking a look at your pet's health with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk, clinical instructor at UW-Madison School of Veterinary Medicine. Call in with your questions, 800-642-1234. And we'll go to Sandy in Madison next. Sandy, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Hi. I have a question. I have a little chihuahua, and he was recently diagnosed with a tracheal collapse.
Mm-hmm.
And the doctor currently has him on, I think it's theophylline for that. And also, he had a secondary diagnosis of pneumonia, so is on antibiotics. He seems to be doing better taking this medication, which is a good thing. But I guess my question is, what is the prognosis or how long will this medication last?
Yeah, it's a very common problem in small breed dogs. And you've got a Chihuahua, which is obviously one of the smallest breeds. And the trachea in these dogs, not every one of them, but some of them, the cartilage rings, instead of being firm, are weaker. And it may not be the whole trachea. It could just be in the chest cavity where they, instead of holding the airway shape, it was, if they're stressed, you know, breathing fast, really excited, forced to exercise, they get a little bit of pressure put on their neck, such as in the form of a collar. If they're walking, it can cause that trachea to close down and snap shut almost, which produces this honking type cough and sometimes really severe respiratory distress. So what do you do about it? You want to rule out other causes, and I'm so glad that your veterinarian looked into infectious causes, because many times that's one of the triggers for this. The dog's been living with a trachea that is weak and can collapse easily, but then you throw a little pneumonia on top of it, and that can cause them to have a worse cough. So often we do have to treat secondary infections. Sometimes we've got so much swelling in the airway from it snapping down all the time that we have to have them on steroids. Sometimes if they need to be on a cough suppressant to also help control some of the coughing, because it may just, the coughing may perpetuate that trachea to close shut. But the big things are management at home. No collars, using a harness instead. A big thing is keeping the weight off of them. And these are dogs that may not want to exercise as much. They typically are a little bit older. And being small dogs and carried around, they can carry extra weight. And that puts more stress on that airway as well, because we can see fat being deposited in the chest cavity. So weight control is important. Then a kind of last chance thing, if we can't get it under control with all that type of stuff, then we're looking at potentially surgery, which doesn't have a great prognosis because they're usually older dogs, but putting in some type of a prosthetic ring type system to help keep that trachea open. It's major, major surgery. Yeah. So we always try everything we can medically before we jump to that.
All right. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Cheryl in Berlin, your turn now. Thank you for calling.
Yes, I have a question. 4 weeks ago, I adopted my mother's 13-year-old cat because they moved to assisted living. And she has never been around cats. She grew up with a Pomeranian, and she's extremely shy. And I have three cats, and I've been trying to keep her kind of secluded in a bedroom with her litter, water pan, and food. And she's hiding. She doesn't want to come out. She's been downstairs behind the washing machine. And she's very friendly to me and everything, but she's really afraid. And I don't know where I should go from here.
Yeah, this is a real tough one, because if she was never socialized with other cats, as a 13-year-old, being put into a home with three other cats can be very terrifying for them. So first of all, I would back up and just say, have her in her own room where she has all the resources she needs, her own bed, food bowl, water bowl, litter boxes, everything that she needs where the other cats can't bother her. Let her get used to just the smells and sounds of the other cat. You may find that plugging in some pheromones may be helpful. There is one that's called multi-cat pheromone, that's a multi-cat feel-away. There's kind of two types of feel-away on the market. One that is a facial pheromone, where for cats that are maybe urine marking and things, it may be helpful. And then there's one that's called multi-cat feel-away, and that's actually the nipple pheromone from nursing mother kitties, and that has a little bit more of a calming effect on cats that are in situations like this. That would be the first place I would go. Sometimes if we have a cat that is just so terrified because of all the changes, we may need to look at intervening with using drugs that may help her with feeling a little calmer in the environment. I always hate to go that route, because you still have the stress of having to get medication into them. But I think if you give her own kind of efficiency apartment in your home and realize that she may never become part of your household, I would also recommend that the other cats in the household have bells or something on their collars so that she can hear them coming. That way, if, you know, once she is in a situation where she can maybe escape into her own private room, if she decides to come out and she, you know, is, you know, wants to escape again, she can hear these cats coming. So that might be helpful. I've had some folks even do things like install the little cat doors that are run off of a magnet that they wear on their collar, or a microchip in their private bedroom. So if you have a hollow core door, it's an easy enough thing to install one of these little cat doors that you can get online or at pet stores. And again, that will keep the other cats from being able to invade in her space, but give her the opportunity to come out and join the rest of the cats when she's feeling comfortable and if she wants to. So how good of you for bringing this cat into your home. But I think it's going to be a little bit of a headache for a while for you, but it sounds like
it is. And And I could tell right away, if she would be the only cat, she would have been just fine.
Yeah, and that may be the thing that you might have. Yeah, rehoming her into an only cat household may, you know, just be the best thing for her as well. Although you'd like to say that you can keep your parents' cat, it may not be the best situation for her.
Thank you so much for calling, and good luck. Appreciate your call very much, Cheryl. A listener emailed to ask if fresh wheatgrass for pets is good for cats. He has a 14-year-old calico, likes to eat a few blades on an empty stomach about once a week, and then, of course, throws it up right away. Just the grass and phlegm, no hair.
Yeah, and, you know, is it because the cat likes to have a salad now and then? Maybe. And then the grass is a little irritating and they upchuck it. Or is it the cat has learned that eating hair is a good purgative, eating grass is a good purgative, and that allows them, if their stomach's upset, to be able to vomit. Since they can't do it any other way, that sometimes that's what they do. So why is your cat doing this every week? If they're eating grass just because they like it and they're able to keep it down most of the time, it's probably not a big deal. But if they only eat it and vomit every time they eat it, then I'd be wondering, is there something going on that's causing your cat to get an upset GI tract that's making them want to vomit?
On to Dale and De Pere now. Dale, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I just got a question. I have two small Cocker Spaniels that walk regularly, and my question is this. If there presents a situation where an aggressive dog comes running out from a backyard and attempts to attack my dogs, is there some type of repellent that's safe for the dogs, I mean the attacking dogs, to deter it from attacking my dogs?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there are sprays that you can use. There's one that's a boar pheromone that makes a loud noise that is a deterrent. I think it's you can get it on, you know, online. I think it's called Stop That. That is very safe to be able to use, and it has a kind of a lavender scent to it as well, but it does make a loud hissing sound. I would definitely report those neighbors to animal control. Their dog is breaking the law by coming off their property to go after your dogs. Dogs need to be under control, especially if they have tendencies to have inner dog aggression. You know, if you're carrying something, like, I wouldn't use, you know, scalding hot coffee, but if you've got a coffee cup in your hand, sometimes throwing that at the dog may be helpful. It's a real difficult situation. I have been in those situations before where sometimes it's just a matter of stopping and not continuing to move. If the dog has predatory tendencies, running or moving may trigger the dog to do that too, and sometimes just stopping, that the dog will stop in their tracks too. It's a tough one, because how often do you have something with you that you can use? And, you know, any of the other products that are like mace-like products are potentially could be harmful to your dog if you're trying to aim it at somebody else. And so that could potentially be a problem too. But I'd look into that product called Stop That, because it is safe. It's not irritating. It's very loud hissing sound. And it supposedly is a pheromone that deters dogs from doing whatever they're doing. And I've actually used it in my own home for when I have my dogs sometimes get into it with each other. I just have to pull the can out now and it's empty, but I've used it and they were like, ooh, you know, that make that sound, and that means stop, and they kind of go to their crates, and I don't have to be the one that's the evil person getting involved. So, yeah.
There you go.
Look into that.
Thank you so much for that call, Dale. Howard emailed to say he wants a cat that won't hurt birds, but also wants to be able to let the cat enjoy the outside. Any ideas for ways to do that?
Oh, number one, look into getting a catio. If you go online, that's the newfangled thing. It's a patio for your cats that's a fenced in, totally enclosed area where they can go outside and enjoy the outdoors without being put at risk of being attacked by other animals or having them become predators. There are things that are sold to help prevent cats from being able to hunt, which don't work very well. They're different bibs and collars. If you just look up cat bibs, I know it sounds weird, but it's this thing that attaches to their collar that's usually made out of a neoprene type material that hangs down, that's supposed to keep them from being able to get their paws up to be able to catch a bird. I've seen cats wearing these bibs and they still can catch birds. Bells and things often don't work, but again, it's worth trying. Keeping them on a leash as long as you're out there, because remember, the cat is a sitting duck when they're out on a leash, and cats can still hunt birds when they're on a leash. So it's a problem. I think the catio is your best option. Yeah, because all cats have that predatory instinct and have that possibility of killing our wildlife.
And if they run free, their life expectancy is about half that of
about 7 or 8 years. Yes.
An indoor cat.
Of an indoor cat, which is now they're living 15 to 18 years easily. So if you want your cat to live longer, keep them indoors.
Dr. Sandy Sawchuk, our guest from the University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine. Always a pleasure to have her come by. And of course, she comes by every month to talk with you about your pet and your pet's health. And another guy who comes by every so often is Mike Crane, director of Wisconsin Public Radio, and he comes by to help me tell you about our membership drive. You rely on the Ideas Network for information, for in-depth discussions, and we rely on you to keep the programs like this one going strong.
Yes, we do. And what a great way to say thank you to the wonderful program with Sandy to make your pledge right now, because listener support is the single largest source of funding for WPR. And that's why your gift of any amount right now makes an important difference at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Mike, we didn't make our goal last time, but we did pretty well. I think we got 10 people to... No.
Yep, that's right. 10.
Yeah, it was 10 people. And now we have a goal of 10 for this particular hour, if I'm not mistaken.
This half hour, that's right. And 3 so far have gotten in touch. That's really awesome. So keep it going. Get in touch at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, because WPR is listener-powered. The goals help us to stay on track to fund the programs you count on here on the Ideas Network.
So do your part now, right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. If you've never given to Wisconsin Public Radio before because you don't think you can give enough to make a difference, I want you to think again. Listener donations make up the single largest portion of funding for WPR, and it doesn't matter how much you give. Doesn't mean you have to give a big gift, does it?
No, it doesn't. Of course, that's great if you can, but gifts from thousands of people combined together how we make up that single largest piece of funding for WPR programs. And many first-time donors give $10 or $20 a month for their WPR listening pleasure. And you decide the amount that works for you and then join the team effort with your gift, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
The Ideas Network keeps you informed and entertained every day. I hope you're enjoying this program with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk. Chapter a Day has been a mainstay here on WPR forever. I like Science Friday an awful lot. Zorba Pastor on Your Health on Saturdays. Wait, Don't Tell Me, says you, many others you've come to rely on.
Yeah, WPR gives you a window on the world like no other. Looking at what Margaret from Green Bay said, WPR provides a lifelong classroom. Well, that's really right. And support for this exciting mix of shows is really important. You know you enjoy the Ideas Network, so make a pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And this spring membership drive, we have a special opportunity for you. You can ask for the Reach Out and Read thank you gift when you give $10 a month or more.
This is really neat. Your thank you gift provides books to young children that are given to them during their wellness doctor visit, and it makes a wonderful connection between parents and kids to read. We all know how important that is. So donate now, and you'll support the WPR programs you enjoy and help Wisconsin kids get a good start in literacy. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I'm John Nevins from Janesville, Wisconsin. I'd like to just share a little bit about why public radio means something to me. As a young boy, I listened to the radio quite a bit because we didn't have television. And I remember laying many times on a Saturday morning in front of the radio and listening to the programming and imagining that I was with the Lone Ranger or with whoever it was that was on the radio. And my parents forbid me to listen to the Green Hornet, but we used to sneak off and do it anyway.
He hunts the biggest of all game, public enemies who try to destroy our America.
Today I don't have to sneak off at all. I listen to it daily in the kitchen as I fix breakfast in the morning and at noon when I'm fixing dinner. It's a very special part of my life, and I am very proud to be a member of WPR and to be here today to share that thanks with the organization.
And you know what? You can help too. Just go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 to make your pledge. Larry Mueller here with Mike Crane asking you for your support during the spring membership drive. Why? Because it makes the WPR programs you rely on possible. And your gift, maybe it's $10 or $20 a month. Whatever amount you choose, that is the right amount.
Larry, we're looking for 7 more pledges by the end of the show in just 5 minutes. Hourly goals are set up to make sure we have the funding for the programs you enjoy. So please make your donation now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Right here on WPR, you get access to the whole world. This kind of exposure really makes a difference in your life. You get the news, the information you need to stay informed, and conversations that make you think, along with great music and entertainment that can help you relax, too.
And whether you live in a small town, even an unincorporated hamlet, or a big city, when you listen to WPR, you are taking part in global citizenry. You're hearing from artists and reporters and really smart veterinarians and experts in the forefront of their fields. Because you appreciate this access to the best the world has to offer, make your pledge of support at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
These days, it's pretty easy to spend a dollar a day or even more on things that are a part of your routine, a cup of coffee, a snack from the vending machine. They all cost more than a buck.
That's right. And consider the news, the information, the inspiration from Wisconsin and around the world that you get right here on the Ideas Network. Maybe a dollar a day, that's about $31 a month. Maybe that's the right donation for you. Give a dollar a day right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 and support the programs you enjoy every day.
And after you've made your donation to WPR, you know, another way to make your gift go further is by telling your friends and family.
Yeah, maybe you'll use Facebook or Instagram or something. Call them up, mention it when you see them. Just letting your friends and family know that you support WPR helps to plant that idea in their minds. So first, make your gift, WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and then let everybody know how good it feels when you support WPR.
Absolutely. You've made that decision to listen to WPR. Now make the decision to support Wisconsin Public Radio financially. It's as simple as that. We're listener supported, and that means that your support is crucial at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
6 more pledges to go in these last 2 minutes of the show. You make WPR possible when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And you get to do 2 good things at once when you make your donation to support WPR programs. Ask for the Reach Out and Read thank you gift. Your thank you gift will provide books for young children, and that's available when you give $10 a month or more at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
A couple of great comments to share, Larry. Faye from Waupun says, I love everything about WPR. And we heard from Ray in Green Bay who says, I've been listening for over 25 years. Thank you so much for what you do. Listening to WPR makes me feel like I'm part of this larger, awesome Wisconsin community. Thank you for that pledge.
Your gift, it's really powerful. It really does make a difference. Mike and I are going to go away here in a few seconds. But if you haven't contributed, now is the time to do it. How do you do it? Well, go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. Thanks if you've given. If you haven't, do it right now.